Little Foxes by Michael McPurgo. Chapter 13. One evening, the fox did not come back to the barge after their romp in the grass. Billy searched in the dark for an hour, shining the torch out over the fields, scanning the night for the glinting eyes of a fox, but he found only the yellow eyes of sheep shining back at him, and never the glazed red of the fox. "Maybe he'll be back by morning, Billy," said Joe. "Gone hunting, perhaps." "He can't hunt," said Billy. "He's too young. He'll starve out there on his own. I know he will." "Then perhaps he's out there learning, Billy. He has to learn to hunt if he's ever going to live alone in the wild." "But he's not," Billy cried. "He's going to stay with me for always."
"Billy, old son," said Joe, "you know a fox is a wild animal. I don't know how you got hold of him, but I bet you got him from the wild. And a fox will always go back to the wild in the end, Billy. You can't keep a fox tame forever." All that night, Billy thought of what Joe had said. Until then, it had simply never occurred to him that the fox might ever want to leave him. And when he woke in the early hours of the morning and found the fox asleep on the bunk beside him, he felt like shouting with joy and waking Joe just to tell him that his fox had come back and that he was right after all, that he would never go off and leave him. But he waited until breakfast and said it then. And Joe lit his first pipe of the day and sighed. "Billy, old son, I've been looking after wild things all my life. To start with, I wanted to possess every one of them, to collect them, to keep them by me so that I could look at them. You learn, old son, that you can't do it, not if you want to do your best by them. This morning I'm going to release two of our swans. You know, the ones that had their legs tangled up and torn by the fishing line. I don't want to see them go, but I've done all I can for them. Now it's up to them. Maybe they'll live, I hope so, and maybe they won't. But that's not in my hands. Just because I helped them, Billy, they don't belong to me. They're wild, Billy. You told me yourself, remember? It's where they belong, out there on the river. And the longer you cling on to your fox, old son, the harder it'll be for him to turn wild again. The younger he goes, the more chance he has of surviving out there." Billy knew he was right, but could not bring himself to acknowledge it openly.
"He's my fox," he said, "and we're together. He don't want to run off, else why's he come back?"
"And one day he may not, old son," said Joe, and left it at that. And each evening now, the fox would disappear earlier and come back later at night. Once so late that Billy was out on deck at dawn, listening to Joe playing his mouth organ, when the fox came trotting back across the field and sat down at some distance from the barge to listen. He would rarely come now when he was called, and instead of curling up beside Billy in the bows of the barge, he would pace the decks like a caged tiger, and when he was with Billy, he seemed no less fond of him, no less trusting, but Billy sensed the fox was becoming more and more distant, more and more interested in other things. And on that last evening, they were sitting out on deck, and Billy had his arm around the fox. He could feel the fox pulling away from him, but held on, reluctant to let him go in case he did not come back.
"Billy, old son," said Joe, "that fox sitting beside you is a wild fox. He loves you, Billy, as much as you love him.
He loves you like a mother, Billy, but foxes leave their mothers, old son. If he comes to rely on you, he won't be a real fox anymore. You'll have taken away his wildness, Billy, and that will be a terrible thing, almost like taking his soul away from him. Let him go, Billy. Let him go, old son."
And Billy released his hold on the fox, and immediately the fox leapt for the shore and ran off. Joe and Billy waited on the deck until the night settled back about them before going to bed. Billy did not even call for the fox that night. He knew by now that there was no point. He knew he was losing him. It was a hot night too, too hot to sleep, and anyway, half of him was always awake waiting for the fox. It was that night that he told Joe about Auntie May and all the other aunties and uncles he had had. He told him everything there was to tell, for it was easier to talk in the dark. He told him about the swan, about the lucky grey feather he kept under his pillow, about his stutter, about Mr. Brownlow and about the wilderness, and all about the four fox cubs he had tried to keep alive.
And Joe listened in silence and never said a word. And when he finished, he said, "Good night, Billy, old son." The fox was not back by first light, nor by breakfast time. Billy could eat no breakfast that morning, and much against Joe's advice, he went out into the fields calling and whistling for him to come. And when he returned to the barge, Joe could see the boy had been crying. Nothing would comfort him, and Joe knew it, so he did not attempt it. As he watched the boy sitting dejected in the bow of the barge, waiting for the fox, Joe made up his mind what he would do. He was sure that the fox would come back eventually, and so he did, at about midday, padding across the field beneath them. Joe saw it first and had his gun ready to hand. He waited until it was close enough before firing both barrels of his shotgun in the air above the fox. Billy was on his feet and screaming at Joe to stop shouting. But Joe loaded the gun again and fired over the fox's head. The fox turned and ran for about 20 paces and then stopped again. "It's the only way, Billy," said Joe, loading the gun once more. "The fox has only one enemy, Billy, man, you and me. If you want him to survive out there, then it's a lesson you'll have to teach him yourself." He handed Billy the gun. "Fire into the sky, Billy. Frighten him so he'll never come back. Do it, Billy, do it for him, and do it now." Billy pulled the trigger twice and watched the fox bolt across the field and vanish into the trees.